G'day, everyone. Quick message before we start. What we're trying to do with this podcast is to help people better understand their mind and how it works and give people practical strategies they can use to maintain and improve their mental health. Would you consider helping us to continue to do that with a financial contribution, large or small? If so, thank you. Just follow the link in the show notes. All donations $2 or more are tax deductible. Hi, welcome to Minding Your Mind, about your mind, how it works, mental illness and mental health. I'm with Professor Ian Hickey, psychiatrist and co-director of the Brain and Mind Centre at the University of Sydney. What are you grateful for? Have a think. Your health, your friends, family, where you live, your job, the weather, your favourite shirt, fresh strawberries in the fridge. When you stop and ask someone or yourself, what are you grateful for? Most people can think of something, usually a few things that they're grateful for. Doing just that, actively focusing on being grateful for the good things in our life can be good for your mental health. It can improve it. The problem for many of us is that it's not that we have nothing to feel grateful for. It's that we never stop and actually be grateful. The things that go wrong occupy much more of our headspace than the things that are going pretty damn good. So today we're going to discuss gratitude, the benefits of it, and ways of getting those benefits by trying to practice a bit of gratitude regularly. Ian, what are you grateful for?
The place I live,
yeah.
The people I live with, the health and well-being of my children and grandchildren, the people I work with.
Yes,
I got lots of stuff.
Good.
Up to this point, my relatively good health,
yeah.
You know, which I didn't really do anything to deserve, just is.
Yeah.
So, in fact, in my life, and many people like me who've led privileged lives, stacks of things we should be grateful for. But the interesting point you made in the introduction is, of course, we don't tend to dwell on that. The nature of our cognitive biases and the nature of the way we think about things is to accentuate the negative. To pick up the bits.
And there's also, I'm reading this really good book called Look Again, and it's about how the brain gets habituated, how we get used to whatever is happening now. And so if we live somewhere nice, if, like me, you're in a lucky position where my wife cooks dinner most nights,
whoa,
and it's really nice dinner,
whoa,
you get used to it and you really appreciate it.
Habituate.
I've just been away for 3 days and I came into my house and thought, oh, this is nice. But today I won't think that. I'll just go, I'm home. So, yeah, we get habituated so we forget to really appreciate the good things and be grateful for them.
So, as you know, James, I've spent a lot of time overseas in recent times. Mm. But to be back in Sydney at this time of the year, when the mornings are so spectacularly beautiful.
Yes.
And the coast is here and the water is warm and, you know, when you've been away, when you live here every day, you kind of forget it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Another beautiful morning. Yeah. Beautiful place to live. Yeah. Harbour looks fabulous. Yeah.
So this isn't just a namby-pamby kumbaya, aren't things good because they're good conversation, because gratitude and being able to practice gratitude every day, and we'll talk about practical ways of doing that shortly, but it is good for your mental health, yes? And there's evidence that suggests that.
Yes, because we do two things you've alluded to. One is we habituate, we just get used to the good. Mm. Oh, yeah, another great morning, another great meal at home. Quite like the person I sleep with. Yeah, that's good. Just get used. And you stop accentuating that. You stop bringing that into consciousness to appreciate it. And we are distracted by the painful, the negative, the things that cause us distress, the fearful. So we over-attend to those. In the current kind of political discussion, it's always interesting to come back to a place like Australia when you've been somewhere in the world where life is much harder, much more difficult, you know, and you come back and you listen to the things that we're arguing about politically in Australia and you think, oh, dear, we don't realise what we've got. And the bits we're arguing about are so minor, if you like, or seem so important, and they're not really. They're being accentuated, they're being amplified by the media and as if they're huge issues, and they're not, which plays into our emotionality.
Yeah.
So from a mental health point of view, you bet there's a necessary issue to stop, reflect, try and have those experiences. And it is hard. I mean, you almost need to do what you were saying. You need to appreciate a good home-cooked meal. You need to go and be somewhere else for a week and come home. In my case, to appreciate how beautiful it is to live where we live, I need to go overseas and spend time.
I mean, not everyone
can do that.
But what we're going to suggest are actually other ways when you can't change your environment of being more mindful about the things that are good in your life and kind of practicing gratitude because it's a good mental health strategy. And do we know, like, do we know what, I mean, kind of emotionally, I get it. You're grateful. It's a nice day. I'm paying attention to that. Aren't I lucky to have a nice day? But I guess more chemically or theoretically, do we know why gratitude tends to improve our mental health?
So in the individual bit, yes, because the other bit I was accentuating, the fear, the negative stuff, sends your arousal, sends your stress responses through the roof. You're upset, you're worked up, you're angry, you know, has all those arousal, and if it persists, negative effects on your physical health as well as your mental health.
Mm.
The gratitude bit, the stopping and the reflecting bit, guess what? Those stress responses go down. You sleep better, you interact better. So in a physiological sense, yes, but we're orientated towards, and our modern world is orientated towards constantly accentuating or amplifying that negative stuff.
Well, and that's a very human thing to look for threats, isn't it? Look for, you know, something's happening at work and it could play out badly for me. I'm going to focus on that and work out what I can do about it. But that is stressful.
From an evolutionary point of view, when there were real threats out there to your livelihood every day, scanning the environment for threat was necessary to survive.
Yeah, and it still is to a degree.
Yeah, but we get worked up over a lot of stuff that is not really that threatening, and we underappreciate in many ways. Now, the second bit, just to go to another bit, which is the interpersonal bit in social groups. So you were talking about just you individually. When's the last time, James, someone said really something nice to you, about what you were doing, like express their gratitude towards you?
Yesterday.
Good.
Yeah.
What happened?
I emceed a friend's wedding, and he said, thank you. He sent me a text saying that was good, thanks.
And how did you feel?
I felt good.
And how did you feel about him?
I liked him more.
Warmer. Yeah, connected. So exactly, I had the same experience yesterday in another place. Somebody who did not need to at all thank me for the work that I'm involved in.
Nice.
Which is otherwise causing me distress. And that guy had no gain, right?
Yeah.
He was not trying to get something out of me or do something else. He just thanked me for doing what I was doing.
Yeah.
Nice. I got to say, I felt a whole lot better.
Yeah.
And I felt very warmly towards him.
Yeah.
Like my degree, I kind of know him in a distant kind of way.
Mm.
But I thought, you know, I'd like to spend more time with that guy.
And hear him say that again.
And he did
again.
It spontaneously. He did it with no ulterior motive. There was nothing about it.
Hmm.
But just to reflect the fact. And he was reflecting some empathy as well. Some aspects of my life, my political life or my social life, they're not that successful.
Yeah.
I bang on about the same kind of stuff quite a lot and see a certain kind of progress. And he was sort of recognizing the fact that doing that without a huge amount of reward, like the things I'd like to change in the mental health system or see progress at, you know, are slow, or sometimes it's two steps forward and three steps backwards. And he was just saying thanks on behalf of him and a lot of others.
That's nice.
For hanging in there. Now, that'll stick in my head while a whole lot of other negative stuff's going on. That one simple act by another human who understands part of what I'm involved in and that there it's, you know, kind of. There's a kind of personal cost to me to do that stuff.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of frustration. Yeah, stressful. So it's serving two purposes, making me feel better. He's done something that's made me feel better about.
And he probably feels better too, expressing gratitude too. He's glad he said it, I would assume, rather than, why'd I suck
up. My second question is, when's the last time you did it? When's the last time you turned around and said to someone,
that's a good point.
Oh, Lucy, when did he last say thanks for that evening meal you mentioned earlier on?
I do that every night. But it might sound a bit formulaic.
No, but family things aside, let's just say out in the wider world,
Yeah, I try and do it a lot. I'm reasonably conscious of it.
Why are you so conscious of it now?
Well, I always have been. I have a deep desire to be liked, and I know it's a good way to get people to like
you.
So you
know it's a socially
– Yeah.
You know the social effect of it. You learn over time it's also socially advantageous to do it.
And if
but
someone,
putting that aside, I mean, you don't just do it for personal gain.
No. I kind of feel bad if I don't do it. If someone has done something that I'm impressed by, if I have an opportunity to say that was really good, then I feel bad if I don't take that opportunity. It feels like the right thing to do to me.
So I guess we're doing on the fact, and I think in our modern societies, we've stopped doing it. We do it less and less.
There's no
evidence
for that.
Yes, there is.
Is there?
Well, yeah, and people's social connections and people's, yeah, and the quality of interpersonal connections, because this goes to a lot of social connectedness issues in local communities, the neighbour next door and participation and stuff. The opportunity, particularly for saying thank you or gratitude for people who are just not your family, isn't it? As people's social connection has gone down, the opportunity.
Right, I see, yep.
Do you pop down the local surf club and say thanks? Do you pop down the local fire brigade and say thanks? People's participation in those things is less. So the expression of gratitude in those situations, the value that people are adding,
has
gone down.
Well, there is this. I've never lived in a house where you say grace, but many years ago, and still in some places today, but it would be declining, it was a ritual at dinner to say grace. Now, that's a religious thing, and I'm not religious, but on the other hand, I just wonder if we should have non-denominational grace, because what it was, we give thanks and, you know, it was usually to God, but you can take the God bit out and just say, we give thanks for, you know, our food and the day we've had, and it's a good ritualistic way to build in a bit of gratitude every day. And you could even say, look, just before we eat, let's all just take a minute to think of something that we're grateful for today, something good that happened. There were probably bad things that happened, but just focus on something good that happened. Let's practice a bit of gratitude. All right, now dig in.
See, and you said, what's the evidence? I'm going back to that one. The ritualized aspect of that in many people's lives.
Yeah.
Most religious things, most prayer things, either individually or collectively, have that strong give thanks. For...
Yeah, I never related to it. And I've been in houses where it's said, and I always said, oh, this is because I don't, you know, I'm not religious. So I always said, no. But what I missed was the fact that actually it's not about necessarily about God, it's about gratitude.
These are arguments I used to lose with my mother continuously.
Right.
Who was kind of religious, but I don't think she was religious in that kind of way. She was kind of pointing out the rituals of these things. And I've had other people point these out. You know, I don't know if you remember this, but we did episodes with Geraldine Doogue early on in this morning, and she pointed out, I saw Geraldine just yesterday, and continuously points out to me that the value of participation in many religions is the rituals.
Yes.
Now, she would say it's not optional, James, just to drop the God bit, you know, like whatever. You and I would probably go with we'd prefer not to have that other overlap.
I'm going to try and introduce that in our family tonight.
Right. So in a family event recently, a member of the family, went out of their way to sort of do that without religion. We should all give thanks for the bits that we've got.
Yeah.
Which was sort of with each other. Rather than attributing it to God, was sort of with each other.
Why don't we all try, everyone who's listening, to introduce it next time we're having dinner at home. With someone else. Let's just try it. It only takes 30 seconds. If you say, let's all think of something we're grateful for, good, eat.
So I'd also argue an intergenerational kind of thing here. I was involved in another discussion this week about how do you understand the nature of privilege? It's very hard for kids growing up with what kids grow up with not to assume that it wasn't always like that or, you know, it isn't like that for everybody else.
Yeah.
Who they as distinct from having a ritual that says, you know what? We're really lucky to have what we have, each other and the wealth and the health. And, you know, a lot of that is good fortune, whatever you attribute it to. It's not – we didn't simply deserve it. We don't simply deserve more. We've got to work at it. You know, we've got to work at it. And I go to the collective bit here. So we talk about gratitude in terms of the individual mental health gain. I'm also talking about gratitude here in terms of the social gain, being able to work together for things that benefit all of us.
So let's talk about the practice of gratitude. And before we do, we've talked about how it can be good for anyone's mental health. Can it be a strategy that you implement if you are depressed or anxious, and can it help? Behavioral strategy you consciously do that will be part of your treatment?
Yes, with just a few caveats. But yes, going back to my earlier thing, if you're really preoccupied with negative thoughts all the time,
and
your train of thoughts has gone to the constantly negative, how badly off I am, how things always go wrong and whatever else, then yeah, part of the reality testing of a lot of cognitive therapies, if you like, is now, hang on a sec, let's look at the external evidence and go one step further. Recognition of what you've got and just stopping and going, now, hang on a sec.
There are bad things, but there are also good things.
There's a lot of good
things. So let's focus on the good.
I've
spent most of the day focusing on the bad things, and I have been diagnosed as being depressed. So now I'm going to spend 5 minutes focusing consciously on five good things for a minute each. That must be good for you.
Yeah, surely. I often find myself saying to people, particularly younger people with mental health problems, about their parents or their carers or others who they're kind of angry with or they're struggling with or whatever. So I don't put this the wrong way around, but I'm saying in a way, it's really good that your parents or these people are hanging in there with you.
Yeah.
It ain't easy. Now, I don't quite put it this way, but just for briefness, you're sort of lucky to have them.
Yeah.
It'd be a much worse situation, which does end up with people often with very severe and persisting mental health problems, that they have nobody left.
Yeah.
Family's gone, other people are gone, they're alone.
So they're not perfect, they irritate you, they say the wrong things, and they're clumsy in the way they talk about your mental illness, but they're there. So just for the next couple of minutes, focus on the fact that they are there and they care.
Yeah, and if you've ever – it's a funny thing to say again, but if you've ever been sick or ill – and I've seen a number of times in my life where I've been laid out, right, to suddenly realise
– someone cares.
Someone cares and someone's there. Good. And to be express – even though you're in the situation of great distress, to express gratitude for the fact of those who are there to get you through it and provide those things when you can't provide them yourself.
Yeah.
And it's very important because it's hard on them.
Yeah. So it's all very well to listen to a podcast and think, oh, yeah, I probably should be more grateful. But that – is going to fade, and in a couple of days you'll forget what this podcast was even about. So let's talk about some ways to actually practically implement more gratitude into your life every day. Your friend told me that when his father died recently, he was very close to his father, whenever he felt sad about it, he consciously tried to be grateful for having a father he really liked and sharing good times with him, and he thought specifically about one of those times. So feeling sad, my father's dead, I was grateful to have him. Then he'd think about the time they, went fishing together or whatever. And he said that was really good. So it seems to me it's a two-step process, gratitude. Focus on and remind ourselves of the good things in life. And that can be one thing in particular. It can be a list of things. It can be a great exercise to try and find or to either think about one particular thing each day and don't just think, yeah, I'm grateful I got enough to eat, but really focus on, go into it and kind of play the movie in your head of being eating a good meal or the fridge being full or the cupboard being full or whatever and your favourite food and kind of immerse yourself in the sense memories of that and think about the gratitude. And think about the thing that is good in your life. That's step one. And then step two, be thankful for it. So step one, think about the good thing. I'm glad I'm married to a nice person. And then and think about why they are a nice person. And then the second bit, yes, be thankful for it. Does that sound all right?
Yes. And I like the specificity you had there.
Yeah, it's got to be specific.
Personally, I had a great dad, but I'm better off thinking about the two or three times when his actions with me really mattered.
Yeah.
And I can think of two or three times in my life where it really mattered. And it's a really good mental image.
Yeah.
And to be grateful for that. It's quite unlike other dads, quite distinctly for me, that matters.
Yes.
In the current thing, sadly, dad's dead now. In the current world with the people I currently live with, to express it. Or in the wider world, the people I work with, or in the setting in which I am, to express that gratitude.
To other people.
Don't just stick it in your head. Now, you said, I think this is where I'm going back to where you were before. We had more ritualized ways of doing that.
Yeah.
So individually and collectively. Rituals. So now, like everything else we have to do, we've got to make ourselves. A few. Yes. We've got to make up a few rituals. We've got to, as you say about what you do in terms of yoga and whatever else, we've got to build it into every day. You've got to build in. We've got to find ways of building it into the normal stuff. Yeah. We're so busy with stuff that doesn't matter.
So one idea is non-denominational grace that we've discussed. Another one that a lot of people use is a gratitude journal. You a fan?
Yes. I mean, and anything that makes the thing overt.
So before bed, you write down three good things that you're grateful for that day.
Yeah.
That's how it works.
Yeah. I'm probably even bigger on the expressing it directly to.
Of course. This is the difference between you and me, isn't it?
It is.
I'm the solitary things, the group things.
But you've got to get it – but your point is right in the first instance. You've got to get it right in your own head first.
Yeah, but expressing it is
good. Then if it does involve other people, the social benefit that derives from that – because, we spend a whole lot of time being angry, critical or neglectful of a lot of those relationships that really do. We take them for granted. Mm. And we take for granted a lot of the aspects of that because we're kind of busy doing all the things we have to do. We don't stop and reflect on that. And again, I'd say we don't have built in a lot of the rituals, church attendance, community attendance things. People don't volunteer. They're not part of those things to the extent that they were. Mm. They don't have those experiences to the extent to which they were. And again, a lot of people say they don't have those comparative experiences. They're not out in other things that make it really obvious how privileged they are or how grateful they should be And often it's the exposure to those things that causes people, younger people and others with less experience, to reflect on that.
So we know about mind plasticity, that the brain can change. Can we, particularly if we're a little bit cynical, maybe a little bit materialistic, as many of us are, can by practicing gratitude, we actually, and maybe for the first, week, month, it's kind of hard and I got to do this thing again, I'm trying. But then can we rewire our brain by making a habit of it to just so that it does become more grateful, more optimistic and ultimately happier?
Yep. So as James, I'm a great behaviourist. Do it. If you do it enough, you will rewire to keep doing it.
Yeah, and you'll remember.
You'll remember and you'll get the positive benefits out of it. You will feel better.
Mm.
Those people you're doing it with, geez, that's kind of nice. You haven't said that in 10 years. People will also notice the change. There's a positive feedback loop here. And in those groups that matter to us, families, workplaces, groups, social relationships.
Oh, it'll come back.
It'll come back.
Well, unless they're all, narcissists.
They're not. And I think
they're not.
They're not. And I think this does irritate me a bit. Sometimes you see people do this and then I hear people say to me, he's only done that for his own good. He's trying to manipulate you. He's just trying to get out. I go, no, not necessarily. Sometimes some people do just do that.
Yeah.
In fact, in social groups, I would argue, we used to intrinsically do it more.
Yeah.
We have become, as a society, more individualistic and we assume people's motives are not always good or, what's in it for him to have said that, kind of stuff. It's distinct from the more it's more not like that happening more generally, then people become less suspicious.
Some people will find it easy to find things to be grateful for. Some people will find it harder and that might be their objective personal circumstances or it might be their mindset. What things should we be looking for if we are finding it hard? I was in Melbourne yesterday and I was in the city and a lot of tall buildings, and then I came around a corner and I was in the sunshine and it just felt so nice. So that's a thing, isn't it?
Yes. Mm. I was in Melbourne yesterday too.
Yeah.
And it was a beautiful day.
Mm.
And I had a similar kind of experience.
Yeah.
I thought, sometimes we just need to stop and reflect on that.
Yeah.
Find yourself in a nice park. Sign yourself suddenly with a – so think in – a lot of psychology and social psychology at the moment is around the sort of comparative. We're so tied up with comparing ourselves with everything.
Mm.
And we always look bad. Someone's always got more. Someone's prettier. Someone's richer. Someone's brighter. Someone's whatever else more powerful. And we get into a very negative kind of mindset. So this goes back to your individual one. I think as individuals, I do think we need to stop. And independent of the circumstances that you're in, if you like, just reflect on those things that are fundamentally good about our day-to-day lives, even in really difficult circumstances.
Well, especially.
Yes. Well, very good point, James. I think sometimes when you're in a really dark spot and things are really tough, it is helpful also to stop and try and appreciate the really good things. Now, a lot of...
And it's harder.
It's harder. So a lot of mindfulness-based approaches to some degree try and do that. Try and get you to stop catastrophizing about the rest of the world, focusing all on all the difficulties, and just appreciate the moment. Mm. Now, we would go one step further, not just appreciate it. Try and find that for which one could be genuinely grateful.
I think a good example is people in jail. I mean, it must be really, really hard if you're in jail for 5 years to think of the good things. And I suppose the first part must be accepting and not continually wishing you're not in jail and thinking about what you would do if you're not in jail. So getting rid of that and then just, will they feed me? Working the laundry isn't that bad. I mean, it must be really hard. And of course, you know, jail, there's lots of people who aren't in jail whose lives, day-to-day lives are really, really, really hard. They're struggling for money. They're working really, really hard. They've got a job they don't like. They're living somewhere they don't like. It's more important for them to do it, but it's harder.
It's challenging. Yeah, I don't. I mean, the jail one, and for someone in my position to talk about people in jail, like, it's a hard thing to talk about and suggest what you're suggesting. But I have been in conversation with people who've been in jail in various ways, and they've said certain good things did happen. They got health care. They got mental health care. They had a roof over their head. You know, and people just assume, I would assume, it was all bad. Go, actually, you know, funny thing. Within a bad situation and bad reasons for being there, some good things did happen.
Yeah.
And trying to, in a sense, maintain that out of the whole experience, what might be useful and what might have been productive, which is essential, and essential to survival. And come back to our central point. From a mental health point of view, it's essential to survival to be able to kind of recalibrate these things independent of the circumstances that you directly find yourself in.
Yeah. Any questions, comments, suggest further topics, send us an email, mindingyourmind2, mindingyourmind, that's numeral2 at gmail.com. Minding Your Mind is supported by the generous philanthropic donations from families who support ongoing research into youth mental health. Our book, Minding Your Mind, is out. Ian's book about depression, The Devil You Knew, is out. Further help is available from Headspace, Beyond Blue, Head to Health and Lifeline. Google them. You can call Lifeline on 1311. 1-4.